Welcome to the Michael Rivera What Really Happened radio show.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show today, the start of a brand new week, and we're already off to a hugely rocky start. Before we get into it, though, if you're trying to watch us over the webcam is not running today. It will be back working tomorrow, but we had a little tiny glitch. We couldn't get it up and running, which is a shame because I actually have a live studio audience today. And she's absolutely gorgeous, and so I'm sorry, she just hit me. So I'm sorry that the webcam is not working, but moving right along, obviously the news right now is the Dow took another major clubbing today. It opened 300 points down on the retail sales figures over the weekend. And I want to point something out here. Starting on Black Friday and through Saturday and Sunday, the TV corporate news was saying, oh, it's wonderful. Everybody's out there spending. They're buying. They're doing all this wonderful stuff. And you should, like lemmings, follow along and do exactly as they are doing. Well, first of all, lemmings don't really do that. That's a myth that was created by the Disney True Life Animal Series videos. Second, when the real numbers came out, basically, it is as expected. It's a terrible retail season. We are not going to get any sudden miraculous miracle on Fifth Avenue to pull a lot of the retail organizations into the black this Christmas. And on that, the market opened 300 points down. Then, about 2 hours before the closing bell, it was announced officially that we are in a recession. Ooh. My first thought is, did somebody actually get paid money to sit there and say, yes, we're in a recession? I mean, all you have to do is walk down to the local shopping mall and look at the vacancy rate or look at all the companies that have gone out of business. Our local telephone company just today declared bankruptcy. We've been in a recession for almost a year, and we all know it. And somebody got paid to stand up and make it official today. And the stock market plunged and ended 679 points down. Sometimes I think those people on those trading floors in Wall Street need to walk outside, maybe get out of New York, and start wandering through the rest of the country, and maybe they'll have a better understanding of what's going on out here. Because apparently it was actually news to some of those people on the trading floors that we're in a recession. Somebody got up and said, we're in a recession. And everyone went, panic. So we'll see what this number does for the global markets overnight and whether we're going to continue this decline tomorrow. But today was the fourth largest single day point loss in the history of the stock market. Now, of course, things are getting kind of rough all over. Today, Icelanders stormed their central bank. This is effectively like Americans storming the Federal Reserve, which may not be entirely a bad idea at this particular point. But it created quite a huge situation, and people are looking at what's going on in Iceland, and they're seeing what's going on in Thailand, and it feels like maybe the entire world is getting ready to revolt against the money changers and the Federal Reserve-type banking system. Because obviously a huge part of the problem that we're all facing doesn't have to do with real money that was borrowed and spent and not paid back, but all of these imaginary fictional debts that were created out of thin air, along with a lot of the money, just by gaming the system and playing the rules. And obviously here I'm talking about the derivatives, because it's estimated right now for all the trillions of dollars that have already been committed to trying to prop up the economic system, some 8.2 trillion total commitments, 3.6 trillion already spent, and I'm going to come back to that in a minute. The total derivatives exposure of the United States, all financial institutions right now, is estimated at $180 trillion with a T dollars. That's more than the country is worth. Where did all this obligation come from? From gambling. That's all. These are gambling debts. These are not investments that simply failed and the money went away and it's still floating around. These are bets that were placed going long, going short. Credit default swaps are the worst, where people are just throwing the money around that giant open-air casino called Wall Street. And they're betting. It's gambling fever. It's like Las Vegas, only the chips are in much larger denominations. And the wheel ran the wrong way. And the people holding those markers are saying, we're fabulously rich. We're owed $180 trillion because we guessed right. And it's just, it's dragging the whole system down. And it's all this trillions and trillions of dollars that are being printed up by the Federal Reserve and thrown out there to try and prop up the system. They're devaluing the dollar, which is why imports are going to be more expensive for the United States. And this is where letting our manufacturing go over the next 30, over the last 30 years, this is really going to come home to bite us on the gluteus maximus. Because we can't simply decide, oh, we'll buy domestically now. There isn't much domestic we can buy. And that is really a big part of the problem. Now, I want to make a point here. Lately, and I pointed this out a couple of days ago when we were first starting to talk about Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State, our government is not really following the Constitution anymore. Hillary's nomination as Secretary of State violates the Constitution, violates Article 1, Section 6 of the U.S. Constitution, which says no senator or representative during the time for which they were elected be appointed to any civil office which shall have been created or the emoluments whereof shall have been increased, meaning a pay raise, during that time they were in office. In other words, because the salary of the Secretary of State was increased during the last congressional session where Hillary was a member, she is barred from being the Secretary of State by Article 1, Section 6 of the Constitution. And nobody's paying attention. They're just shrugging it off. And we know that George Bush was saying the Constitution is just a blankety-blank piece of paper. But there's one other piece of evidence right now. All this money that Bernanke and Paulson are flinging at the Wall Street giants to prop them up, fill their golden parachutes, and in the case of AIG, throw some very nice executive parties. All of this money is technically illegal as well because Congress has not voted to raise the debt ceiling to accommodate all of this new money which the Federal Reserve is printing up to loan to us. Congress has not approved this indebtedness. Neither have we the people, but we don't get a vote. But Congress is supposed to vote to raise the debt ceiling for all of this money that's being spent. They did do it back around when the $700 billion TARP fund went through. But they haven't done it again to cover all these trillions and trillions of dollars that are just flowing out of the Federal Reserve on your tab. So right now it seems like the government is almost behaving as if somebody very quietly declared a national emergency and suspended the Constitution because nobody seems to be paying attention to it anymore. So, you know, it is a mess. And the bottom line is this $8.3 trillion that has been committed to shoring up the financial markets, and that means the big three automakers and Wall Street, the banks, and, but not you, not the mortgage holders. That all kind of went away. You're still on the hook. Foreclosures are still skyrocketing. You know, no luck for you, even though ultimately you're paying for all of this. But this $8.3 trillion, what this comes down to is $100,000 per American household has been dumped onto your future tax obligations, plus accruing interest, $100,000 per household, for which you will receive no services. There will be no improvements to the roads, no improvements to the schools, no emergency rooms, bridges won't get inspected, levees will not be repaired. You will just be expected to fork over in the coming years $100,000 more than you otherwise would have owed in order to cover this giveaway that is flowing out to the banks and the corporations. Frankly, the government is acting like they know their days are numbered. They're ignoring the Constitution. They're spending money like there's no tomorrow. They're spending money like they know they're not going to have to worry about getting it repaid. And, you know, especially if the stock market takes another major dump tomorrow, like it did today, I think we're on the edge of panic. Even Citibank says we're going to have a civil war in this country in the next 2 years. And I tend to agree. We're going to take a break here for some commercials. If you want to join us on the air, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. We will be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And remember, the more you call in, the less you have to listen to me talk. So pick up those phones and dial, 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 dial. Now, going back to the financial news, today we are seeing the Democrats in Congress possibly trying to garner forgiveness, or maybe just trying to please their donors and backers a little bit more. They're talking about yet another bailout for a stimulus package. This one estimated to cost $500 billion. I guess they thought maybe $700 billion got them in trouble asking for that much last time, so they're going to scale it down and they're just going to say $500 billion. It's only half a trillion. It's not very much money at all, after. And they're selling this new one as including a middle-class tax cut, money for roads, bridge, and mass transit construction, and expanded aid to states, which, as you've heard, even California is in serious trouble right now, and investments in renewable energy. And it all sounds wonderful. And we all know that our roads and bridges need a lot of work. They have been allowed to simply rot away during the last 8 years so that the money could be spent on the wars in Iraq. By the way, a little side note, any of you pick up the fact that today George Bush was awarded this International Peace Medal, which strikes me as ironic since this is the guy who lied us into two wars of conquest, which are still ongoing. But anyway, I digress. Getting back to the $500 billion, it sounds good. But you need to remember, back when they were talking about the $700 billion bailout, that was supposed to buy up toxic assets from the mortgage companies to free up their capital to go back to making loans for home buyers. And then even with that very lofty, noble-sounding purpose, 90% of Americans were opposed to it. They flooded Congress with calls. And Congress still passed it, although, again, this gets back to that issue of constitutionality, because the House tried to pass the bill, and it failed. Then the Senate passed one, and then the House voted to concur. That is also unconstitutional, because under the Constitution, revenue bills must originate in the House of Representatives. The Founding Fathers understood that the Senate would be comprised of people from the upper levels of society. They would be very rich. They would be less reluctant to simply spend money wherever they felt it was necessary out of the public treasury. The House of Representatives, which was modeled more on the British House of Commons, was expected to be people from ordinary working life who would be a little bit more austere spending the public treasury. So that is why the Constitution says revenue bills must originate in the House, then be ratified and amended by the Senate. It was done the reverse order this time. And again, nobody is pointing out the fact that the original $700 billion bailout, the TARP bill, was unconstitutional. But the point I want to make is we were told that the money, the $700 billion, was going to go to buy those toxic assets. And then as soon as the money was passed, along with all these conditions that Paulson had no oversight, he didn't have to answer to anybody, he could just decide to spend the money wherever he wanted, and the toxic asset purchase went out the window, and it became direct capital injections into Wall Street investment houses, including Paulson's former company over at Goldman Sachs, which still lost 15% of its value today in the market drop. So the fact that Paulson keeps changing what that money is to be used for, I think underscores the fact they didn't really have a plan going in. They just picked a figure out of the air, $700 billion, passed the money and said, okay, we're gonna throw this at whatever we think the problem is. But there was no detailed plan. And, of course, the money went to a completely different purpose than what we, the voters, were told it was going to go to. So for this new $500 billion, they're going to bait you in with promises of a middle-class tax cut, road construction, bridge, aid to states, investments in renewable, whatever they think you want to hear, they're going to tack on this. And once it's passed, based on Congress and Paulson's and Bernanke's history with the last $700 billion bailout, it's going to go someplace else completely. So exercise the appropriate caution about this one. Now, the Associated Press has been doing a document review and has discovered that way back in January 2006, long time ago, when everybody or the majority of people still thought the economy was looking pretty darn good, Paris Welch, who's in the California mortgage lending business, he wrote to the regulators in January 2006 and said, we are heading into problems because of the no money down, interest-only mortgages, the subprime things. The money is just being thrown about as fast as they can because, obviously, the more money goes out, the more interest is generated and comes back, and everybody is looking better. But it was going out to these very, very risky loans, which were then being packaged into these mortgage-backed securities. There were proposed regulations on the no money down on these subprime mortgages back in 2006, and the Bush administration directly intervened to prevent this legislation from moving forward. The Bush administration ignored the warnings that said we were heading into a serious financial situation. This is not a case of accident. It is a case of by design. We were sold into this crisis by the Bush administration, who wanted to do favors for their donors who worked in the subprime mortgage industry. And remember, the other big mistake, the one that nobody really wants to talk about, the event, the legislative event that triggered the crisis, after everybody had all their subprime mortgages and they were all struggling to make the payments on that and their credit cards, and then all of a sudden the Bush administration hands tax credits to American corporations to make it easier to send high-paying manufacturing jobs to other countries. And then all of a sudden, people who had been making $80,000, $90,000 a year and keeping up on their mortgage payments are all of a sudden being forced to take jobs where they're making maybe $55,000, $60,000 a year, and they start missing payments, and that's when it all started coming down. It all started falling apart. Yes, there's blame in a lot of directions, but the initiating event in the cascade of destruction, to borrow the terminology the NTSB would use, the initiating event was encouraging American companies to send high-paying manufacturing jobs to other countries, literally collapsed the foundation of the labor force of America on which the rest of the economic pyramid is built. All economies rest on the labor of the working class. You cannot have an economy without them. Somebody in Wall Street and Washington, D.C. forgot that cardinal rule of economic health, that labor precedes capital. And they just said, well, we don't need to worry about manufacturing and all that dirty, icky, greasy stuff. We'll just send it off to some other country. And then the economy collapses around them, and they're standing there scratching their head and saying, gee, I wonder what the heck happened. You know, print us up some more money so we can go back to Wall Street for another spin at that wheel. And that's exactly what's going on. We're going to take another break here. If you'd like to join us on the air, 800-259-9231. We will be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is the GCN Radio Network, home to hard-hitting talk radio.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're talking about the economy. We're talking about, well, all kinds of stuff here. I wanted to go back, though, and make a comment because they were talking about part of this new $500 billion stimulus package to give middle-class tax cuts. Meanwhile, they have just finished spending $3.6 trillion with another promise of another four yet to go, which is going to get dumped, for the most part, on the taxpayers as well. So, obviously, we're talking about a little tiny token tax cut at best. But, I know how to fix the economy overnight. The government says they'd like to find a fix for it. It's a terrible circumstance. We've been allowing our manufacturing to erode for 30 years, and we are in dire circumstance, but I know a way to turn the economy around overnight. And that is to cut all taxes by 50% across the board. Now, we'd have to give something up, okay, like killing Middle Eastern people for no reason at all. Because right now, 50 cents of every tax dollar goes toward building weapons and bombs and stuff that we drop on people who really haven't done anything to us, you know, at all, except be in the way of where somebody in power wants to go. But if we could just get away from this idea that mass murder is fun, as long as it's wrapped in a flag, and just stop killing. And just get up tomorrow morning and say, I am not going to kill today. And if we could just get along without that, we could cut taxes in half without cutting any domestic services. We might even have a little left over to put in domestic services. And if everybody in this country, young, old, rich, poor, man, woman, black, white, pink, chartreuse, who knows, if everybody all of a sudden were keeping a lot more of their money, not just a token few percentage points here and there that we get advertised in political speeches, but if we had our taxes cut in half across the board, the economy would light up. And the United States of America, which has led the world into the edge of a Great Depression, could lead the world out of it. Because remember, the American dollar is the reserve currency to the world. That means that if you are a bank in another country and you run out of cash, you can come to the U.S. and get dollars the way American banks would go to the Federal Reserve to get dollars. The dollar is the reserve currency of the world. That's one of the things that props up its value internationally, along with being the international oil currency of choice for the most part. So if we cut taxes across the board, 50%, and just said, okay, we're going to stop killing people tomorrow, which I think is a good idea, the American economy would turn around, and just as we drag the world down, we would drag the world back up again. And, of course, our government's never going to do that because for all their talk about concern about the American people, the one thing they're never, ever, ever going to do is take their hands off of our wallets. Now, speaking of killing people in other parts of the world, I want to talk a little bit about Iraq. And I just want to recap for a moment that victory in Iraq is impossible. And the reason it is because all the publicly given reasons for the war in Iraq turned out to be lies. There were no weapons of mass destruction. There were no nuclear bombs, as President Bush likes to mispronounce it. Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. We've got video of President Bush admitting that. Iraq was not aiding Al-Qaeda, whoever Al-Qaeda turns out to be. So we cannot politically be seen to win the war in Iraq because none of the objectives that we went in there with can be achieved. Now, as you know, this last week, the new security agreement with Iraq was arm-twisted through the Iraqi legislature, many of whom did not show up to vote just out of protest. And it still has to go to a public referendum in July, and I have no doubt they're shipping the Diebold machines over there even as I speak. And the media tried to say, oh, this is wonderful. With the signing of this agreement means our kids will be home in 2 years. No, that's not good news. It's not good news at all. The UN mandate for us to be in Iraq expires the end of this month. And all the other countries that were part of this invasion and conquest of Iraq, they are going home. South Korea today is taking their kids and they're going home. After the 1st of January, only the United States will still be occupying Iraq. Why? Why are we staying in there when we cannot win this war? The Iraqi people don't want us there. It's an embarrassment to the United States that we're still in there. And, of course, it's costing us a huge amount of money at a time when we simply cannot afford the luxury of conquering countries around the world for no particular reason. Then it looks cool when we stick a little pin in the map in the president's office. So this new rush to a new war is very alarming because it betrays a certain degree of recklessness on the part of our leadership. And I understand why they're doing it. The United States was in a depression in the 1890s and didn't really pull out of it until the First World War. And, of course, the United States did not pull out of the Great Depression until World War II started. So here we are. Officially, they're acknowledging it's a recession. We already know we're going into depression. everything is collapsing too fast. It's not going to stop or reverse anytime soon. There's a big, huge crash coming. And so our government, based on that prior history, is thinking, well, you know, if we kick up a good war here, and we'll just get everybody's patriotism just cranked up, and they'll gladly starve and walk around without shoes on their feet and live without medical treatment because there'll be a war on, and they'll know that there's got to be sacrifices so we can beat whoever it is we're going to have the war with. And they're thinking that they'll win this third world war, big mistake number three, I like to call it, and all will be sweetness and light again, and we'll have that wonderful, wonderful economic prosperity that we had at the end of World War II when we were the only nation that still had a manufacturing base. And therein lies the reason it's ultimately not going to work. Why the United States, if it starts World War III, is going to lose. Because when we went into World War I and World War II, we were a major manufacturing nation. We had a huge industrial output. We could make anything, and we made the best of it in the world. But we've lost that. We gave it away for the last 30 years. We have to buy stuff from other countries. We even have to buy bullets for our army from other countries now. We're in hock up to our eyebrows. We can't really make much of anything. Our big three automakers are hovering on the brink of collapse, and they're begging for money, and when they get the money, they go down and they build the factories in Brazil now, which is a slap in the face to the American taxpayers who are picking up the tab. In the event of a major war, similar to World War I or World War II, the United States currently cannot sustain the level of industrial output that it takes to fight a major military war on the other side of the globe. And it is for this reason that trying to kick up a new war with Pakistan as a way to maybe backdoor into Iran and that whole, you know, the project for the new American century and this endless war, 100 years war, the clash of civilizations, whatever label you want to put onto it, it's a bad idea because we're going to lose it because we don't have the infrastructure and the resources and the skills and the industry to see it through to the end. We have a bunch of people that are playing empire for real with the real planet, and they are totally disconnected from the reality of what the U.S. is really capable of doing, and more to the point, not capable of doing. So I'm very concerned and very disappointed that Barack Obama is out there talking tough about the military and being tough with Iran and being tough with Pakistan and with Hillary Clinton as the Secretary of State. Somehow I don't think diplomacy is going to be relied on to solve the world's problems. And certainly with Gates continuing as Secretary of Defense, it does seem as if Barack Obama has drunk the Kool-Aid of thinking that nothing will solve America's financial woes than some good old blood and guts all over the fields of battle. So, all right, we're going to take a break here. We're going to come back for the last segment of today's show. We're going to talk about some science and health issues and wrapping up the show before the end of the day. So stay tuned. If you want to join us on the air, one more segment to do so, 800-259-9231. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors. America, welcome back to the radio show here, and I'm just now noticing that my internet messenger to our radio control room seems to have locked up, and so this is why I'm not getting messages from Donovan, who is twiddling our dials and feeding the giant mutant hamster that is lurking behind our mixer board there. So we're going to try and get that straightened up and make sure that I'm not missing any important messages. Anyway, last week I covered this story, and I want to go back to it a little bit again because I think it is very revelatory of the attitude of the U.S. government toward its people. And the reason I say that has to do with the melamine scandal. Now, as you know, several months ago, there was a big scandal where it came out that products made in China, specifically baby formula and pet foods, various things like that, were contaminated with this. Essentially, it's a plastic called melamine, and it was in there because it's very inexpensive, and it would fool the tests that were done to make sure that products had a certain minimal amount of food content in them. The problem is that this material is, over time, very toxic. It accumulates in the kidneys. It can cause blockages. Pets were dying from it. Some children died from it. Big, huge scandal. A lot of finger pointing at China. And basically, you know, if I said, ooh, bad melamine, bad melamine, bad melamine. Then all of a sudden, it turns out that the FDA had been detecting melamine in American baby formula products. And they were trying to keep it under wraps and finally responding to a Freedom of Information Act request. They finally admitted that, yes, indeed, American baby formula products had melamine in them. Now, one month ago, the FDA issued a report saying that they could not determine that there was a safe level of exposure to melamine. Basically, what they were saying was that over time, any exposure is going to have harmful effects on babies or pets or whoever is ingesting it. That's what they said a month ago. Then a week ago, they admit that melamine is being found in American baby formula. And then just the day after, the FDA comes out and says, well, we've established a minimum safety level, and all of the American baby food products are below that level, so they don't need to do a recall, they don't need to reformulate, they don't need to remanufacture. Nobody sue them because we are declaring them to be safe. And the point here is that in the short space of time that it took for them to come out with this statement, there was no way to establish any kind of research program to determine safe levels of melamine. Certainly given their report of a month previously that it was impossible to determine that there even was a safe level of melamine exposure. It is very clear that the FDA simply put out this statement to protect the companies that make these baby formulas, companies like Nestle. So now we're looking at a situation where 90% of U.S. infant formula may be contaminated with melamine. Now, they're using contaminated. Makes it sound like it's an accident. It isn't, okay? Because this is a material that has – somebody has to go out and buy this stuff and bring it into the factory and dump it into the vat where they're mixing up whatever they're mixing up. And it could be at one of the companies that provides a component of the baby formula further down the chain. But – wherever it's coming from, it is intentional. And it's being done to basically make the product a little bit cheaper and still get past the safety inspections or the food quality inspections and get it into the store. And we already know that baby formula often contains stuff babies shouldn't have, like aspartame and monosodium glutamate. But I think the point I want to make here right now is we start thinking about, is the government really trying to take care of us during this economic crisis? I think you need to look at the way the FDA simply declared by fiat that this chemical contamination in baby formula was safe for the babies without any support for it whatsoever, because that's what the corporations wanted to be in the media. And that shows where the priorities lie. Mussolini used to say that fascism is what happens when government and corporations team up together against the ordinary people. And we're there. And how do we know we're there? Well, because under fascism, profits are kept private. If you make a lot of money, you get to keep it. But losses are socialized. If you lose a lot of money, they'll spread that around the general population, which is what all this bailout is all about. Those corporations and executives who made a huge amount of money, they get to keep it. And those that did not are dumping the losses onto the American taxpayer. That's what the bailout really means. Now, moving along, we have another story today where pregnant women now are being warned off of makeup cosmetics. Now, the FDA has never subjected cosmetics and of any kind to the kinds of scrutiny that would normally be conducted for any pharmaceutical or even food that goes inside your body. The policy has always been declared that makeup is external and artificial aromas are external, perfumes are external. Therefore, we don't need to test them for toxic effects on people. Now, the reality is that the body is very porous. and cosmetics will seep through your skin. Now, those of you who've been listeners for the show for a long time know what we went through, my wife and I, with low-end cosmetics that had formaldehyde precursors in them as a preservative, and how it would absorb through her skin and provoke a reaction which included severe joint pain. Now we're finding out that pregnant women are being warned off certain types of makeup because there are chemicals in the makeup which can go through the skin and cause birth defects. So, again, we have the FDA is taking a position on the testing and toxicity of cosmetics that is not rooted in science or the welfare of the public, but is simply in league with, or in line with what the corporations, the cosmetics manufacturers, or importers actually in this case, want to have out there. Go ahead, rub this stuff all over your navel. It's perfectly safe. It won't hurt you. And the same thing with the artificial perfumes and aromas. There are thousands of artificial scent chemicals. Only a handful have ever actually been tested for toxic effects from long-term exposure. The FDA says they're external. Of course they're not external. The instant you smell them, it's inside your nose. It has penetrated the tissues of the sinuses to reach the scent organs. Or you breathe it into your lungs and it gets into your bloodstream through your lungs. These are not external. If you want to find out how porous the body is, take a piece of peeled garlic and rub it on the bottom of your feet and just see how long it is before you taste it inside your mouth. The body is very porous, and when you put things on it, whether it's soap or cosmetic or whatever, it will go right through the skin and get into your bloodstream, and it will go everywhere. And this idea, first of all, I'm opposed to cosmetics anyway because I think women are beautiful the way the universe made them. And I put cosmetics on the same level as those little cloth veils they make women wear in the Middle East, because whether it's a cloth veil or a bunch of chemicals and powders, it's sending the same message that your face isn't fit for public view just as it is. And I think that's a terrible message to be giving to women anywhere, whether it's the Middle East or here. And, of course, with the chemicals and the powders and stuff, because it's used once and wash away, the profit margin and markup is a lot bigger than it is with the little veils over there in the Middle East. But I think it's really the same thing. It's teaching women that their faces are not to be seen in public unless they are decorated or covered or somehow made more presentable. And it's a terrible message. And now we find out there are health consequences involved with that. All right. Well, anyway, we're gonna start wrapping up the show here. We've only got about another minute left to talk. And obviously, going into tomorrow, we're going to be very concerned about the stock market because there's a lot of talk about what Obama's going to do and this and that. And frankly, I think Obama is being set up to be the next Herbert Hoover because history always associates Herbert Hoover with the Great Depression. But the truth is, Herbert Hoover did not create the Great Depression. It was created for him. He got to take the political fall for it. I think Obama may have walked into a bit of a landmine that he may not be as prepared to deal with as he thinks he is. That's it for our show today. We're going to be back tomorrow night, same time, same channel. Tune in. Get your dialing fingers ready. Until then, stay safe, be well, drive carefully, and aloha, America.